And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Bill Frank. What happens when the Chinese government tries to regulate free markets? That's the question on investors' minds. The world's second largest economy is showing danger signs. The Shanghai Composite Index has fallen by a third in 1 month's time. The declines come despite measures by the Chinese government to prop up stock prices. At one point, more than 1,300 companies, that represents about 40% of the value of companies on the mainland, had halted trading in an effort to stop this slide. Now, to put it in some perspective, between June of 2014 and June of 2015, the Shanghai Composite Index rose by 150%. The big reason for the stock market rally was a lot more people started buying stocks with borrowed money. This practice is known as trading on margin. Margin trading used to be strictly regulated by the Chinese government, but Chinese authorities have gradually relaxed the requirements over the last 5 years. What does this plunge in the Chinese stock market mean for the Chinese and the world economies? Joining me to discuss this is Professor Li Mao. He's an assistant professor of finance at Warwick's Business School, who researches the effect of information on asset pricing. Joining us from Great Britain, welcome to the show, Dr. Mao. How are you today?
Oh, I feel good.
Good. Well, we're thankful that you could join us today. And let's start with the big picture, if we could. Most people in the United States see that there's a disconnect between what happens in our stock market and the underlying economy. China, on the other hand, is much more opaque to us in the West. To what extent does the stock market crash reflect the state of the real economy in China? And it should be noted that you've just gotten back from China. You've seen this firsthand.
In China, you know, the stock market is actually small, and it is somehow passive to the real economy, meaning that it does not feedback very much, or at least in the short run, it does not feedback into the real economy.
Okay, and why?
However, I think that the major theme under this time's market crash is that, well, we do feel that the market sentiment or the investor sentiment is highly impacted by the slowing down of the growth.
Without a doubt, sentiment is slowed down. It seems to us in the West that the Chinese government is also saying to people, you know, it's not good to have ostentatious displays of wealth anymore. It's really not good, at least for the time being, to show off your wealth, to show off the growth in the stock market. Is that an accurate and fair assessment?
I don't think so. I think the last government, they didn't pay any attention to the stock markets. They didn't think that stock markets was a part of their political plan. However, for this government, somehow they suddenly think that they have to push the stock market and use it as a political goal. Then I somehow can understand this purpose, because as a real economy is slowing down to grow, then you have to use some other things to let a kind of ordinary household, first, like, to give them a way to for investment.
Ah, yes.
So the second thing is that you need to let them think that they share the growth of the economy. In growth, for example, the best thing is that you let their nominal wealth also grow. So the best way is that let them to participate in the stock markets and let the stock market grow. So all of these things can give a psychological effect to the private sector that, well, you share all the benefits of this kind of growth of China, and I think they want to achieve this kind of political goal.
And I think that may be the case, but let's look at the reality, if we can, for just a minute, because in reality, only 20% of the households have any money invested in the stock market. Most Chinese keep their wealth in real estate or cash. And then I understand the government's goal of trying to stop being a manufacturing economy and being more of a consumer economy. And part of that has to be letting people invest in the stock market. But if only 20% of the people are investing in the stock market, are you really achieving the goal?
I think 20% of the people investing in the stock market is already not a small number.
Well, that is true. That is true.
And also, well, in China, if you consider that generation that were active to participate in any kind of financial markets at all, I think they pretty much played in the financial market. So, as I said, is that the real effects might be not that large, but it has a significant psychological effect.
My guest is Dr. Li Mao. He is a professor at Warwick School of Business in Great Britain. We're talking about the Chinese market's plunge in the last few weeks. What is the chance of contagion from the Chinese stock market plunge? I mean, when you look at it, it's based on buying on leverage. And isn't that the way that the 2007-2008 Great Recession started, was too many people buying on leverage? Is there a chance that this is a precursor to a slowdown, if not a recession, in China?
I agree that during year 2008 and on, the stock market was crashed by also this deleveraging process. And this time in China, it's the same version of the story. So when the market was crashed, and then associated with that, there was a deleveraging process. But luckily, this time, the banking system has been intact from this market crash. So then I don't think there is a way that this contagion from the crash of financial market be transferred to the real economy.
Well, that is a very interesting point, and I know you're not an expert on the Chinese banking system. That's not why I brought you on the show, but The government is actually propping up the stock market, which is fine. They've got trillions in excess reserves in cash that they can do this. But in reality, if they're propping up the market much the same way in the United States that the Federal Reserve is propping up the U.S. market, or in Europe the ECB is propping up their markets, why then is it a free market? Because you really are looking at government controlling that market to prevent it from sliding farther.
The government is controlling the market not directly through prices and the trading behavior. They somehow can prop the market through liquidity. Liquidity meaning whether you can get access to financing. So the Fed in the United States or the ECB, when they want to prop the market, they create a lot of liquidity by keeping the borrowing costs low. In China, this kind of propping up is different, meaning that, well, the Chinese government did decrease the borrowing costs a lot. However, on the other side, they have also played this propaganda or the media games through their official press.
All right, I can see that. And that does make me feel a little bit better to know that they're not so directly involved in the Chinese markets. My guest is Dr. Li Mao. So, Doctor, this discrepancy in the volatility between the Chinese actual stock market valuations has me puzzled. Because if I look in the United States at American depository receipts on Chinese stocks, ADRs is a proxy of the stocks on mainland China, they are not as volatile as the actual share prices in China. And that has me perplexed. Why would the ADRs be less volatile in the United States than the share prices going on in China?
I think this is a really great question, and it's a little bit complicated, so we need to do it carefully. So I think as a first layer, a lot of American ADRs of Chinese stock, they are linked to H shares, meaning that the shares of Chinese companies traded in the Hong Kong market.
Right.
Yeah, they're not shares traded in the Chinese stock market, like in Shanghai and Shenzhen market. So this is the first layer of disconnection. And the second layer of disconnection that I think I want to emphasize is that the investor groups are very different.
How so?
I think that the prices of the Chinese stocks that are traded within China, they are driven a lot by liquidity shocks. Let me explain this liquidity shock a little bit further. Is that, well, you know that relative to the amount of private wealth, the Chinese stock market is still very small.
Right.
So that's why a kind of little swing in the investor sentiment will create or destroy very large buying power. So, well, these kind of buying power from this private wealth, we can call them liquidity. And also, if you think the Chinese households, they have nowhere else to invest except for saving equity market and the real estate market. So when the real estate market, as it is now, in stalemate, that the prices are not growing, so then the retail investors, they need to rush into the stock market. So any kind of swing in the sentiment, they will reflect greatly in the market liquidity, and we know that this liquidity drives stock prices. So that's why the stock prices that are traded in China, that they will be very volatile.
I see. All right. Well, that explains it. Thank you for clearing that up for us. But I think the question on my listeners' minds is this, then. Having heard everything that you've had to say from being on the ground in China, seeing this all firsthand and studying it, of course, if people are interested in investing in Chinese stocks, are electronically traded funds, ETFs, the way to play the Chinese stock market during these periods of volatility?
I mean, if you're looking for investment advice, then this is a very tricky question. But I think I can talk something about it. Because the first thing, it's just about whether you want to, really want to get exposure to the Chinese market. So I don't think it is a good time now to get exposure. I would view that these markets, I mean, we have witnessed that the market was crashed, but then it recovered. It was recovered a little bit. But I think the price distortion in the Chinese stock market is still high, so it is not a good time to get a lot of China exposure. But if you do want to get some China exposure, you want to take the risk and you want to play the game, I will not invest in anything that are related to Hong Kong stock market, because I found no reason. So the first ETF that you mentioned in your list is FXI.
Right, which is the Hong Kong Exchange, right?
Yeah, which are stocks traded in Hong Kong Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And these are Chinese companies. But the valuation level of these stocks is similar to the Hong Kong market, the other stocks in the Hong Kong market. And this, we know that this valuation is very low. And I do not see any kind of convergence in valuation, meaning that the valuation of H shares would converge to the valuation of stocks traded in China. Yeah, the low valuation is perhaps due to the fact that, you know, the Hong Kong market is actually very small market, and it's very fragile to external negative shocks.
All right. So if Hong Kong's not the way to play it, then what about the A shares, which is ticker symbol ASHR? Now, those are mainland Chinese stocks.
This is something that I want to talk about. I think this has always been my first choice of ETF over a long time. And I think it gives you a very clean but well-diversified exposure to China and China only. So if you cannot directly invest in China, because we know that capital flow is strictly limited, but you want to have really clean exposure to China, and this is the thing that you want to play. And I will say there is another layer of benefit is diversification. Because, you know, because of this kind of capital flow control across borders, the Chinese market is somehow independent with the other parts of the world.
Very true.
If you get a very clean China exposure, this gives you a diversification benefit.
That is great. ASHR is the way to go. My guest has been Dr. Li Mao. He's an assistant professor of finance at Warwick Business School. Dr. Mao, thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll be talking to you down the road.
Okay, thanks very much, Bill.
Thank you.